Okay, welcome everyone. Welcome Paul, Zadie, Judd, Lonnie. Good to see you, Lonnie. Welcome. All right, so we find ourselves on the top of Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph 23a, and we are continuing our discussion in which we are elaborating on our Mishnah. Our Mishnah told us that depending on the degree of sanctity of the day, that will inform us how many aliyos there are. So a typical day has three aliyos, Rosh Chodesh HaMoed four aliyos, Yom Tov five aliyos, Yom Kippur six, and Shabbos, which has a more severe punishment, it is seven aliyos. So we're going to elaborate on this presently. Afterwards, we're going to ask the following question, which is there perhaps some deeper significance to where we got the idea of three aliyos, five aliyos, seven aliyos from? And then we're actually going to have a very interesting one-liner, Bryce, that we're going to quote. It's very small, but we'll elaborate on this because I'm sure people will be interested to see what the Mefarshim have to say, which we'll talk about whether women can read from the Torah. Very pertinent given the recent services at a good over Simchas Torah. And then finally, we'll ask the question, which is the nature of Maftir. Is Maftir considered to be an additional Aliyah? Why do we have a Maftir? What's the purpose of it? So that's what we have to look forward to today. Many ideas with practical implications. So without any further ado, let's see. It looks like Marina Toby just joined us. Welcome. We'll join in a moment. Also, just wanted to put out there that if there is a general interest in meeting in person, if I get three individuals who are interested in meeting in person on a regular basis, that means I'm not going to hold you to being there every week. Of course, we have life comes up, but if there's a general interest of three individuals who'd like to come on a regular basis, I'm happy to move back to in person with Zoom option. So I know Toby already expressed interest in coming in person. If there are two other individuals, you could think about it and you can let me know at the end of this year if you are interested. Okay? That way I'm not putting anyone on the spot. Here we go. On the top of Chaf Gimel Amud Aleph, top of 23a. Oh, sorry, Paul. Oh, sorry. Okay. Shisha. So here we go. Masnisa money. So we want to, this is what the Gemara often does, which is if the Mishnah doesn't tell us who is the Tana, we want to figure out who is the anonymous Tana of the Mishnah. Who is it going in accordance with? So if we're not getting the name, presumably the Mishnah's in accordance with someone who goes on record somewhere else. So who is it? So Lo Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva. The Gemara is going to present a question, which is we're going to have a Braisa, which deals with the same topic, presents two different views, but neither of those two different views that we have on record seem to accord with our Mishnah. The Tanya, b'yom tov chamisha b'yom ha-kippurim shisha u'b'shabbes shiva ein posmehen ve'ein mosifen lehen divrei Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael says that on Yom Tov there are five aliyos, Yom Kippur six aliyos, Shabbos seven aliyos. Sounds good so far, right? Sounds like our Mishnah. However, whereas our Mishnah says that you can do hosafos, you can add on extra aliyos on these days, Rabbi Shmuel says, Amos Sifrin, we do not add hosafos, which I guess Erwin's logged on. Erwin, you see, we passing like Rabbi Shmuel, okay? We don't do hosafos. Rabbi Akiva Omer, B'yom Tov Chamisha, U'B'yom HaKippurim Shiva,
Why can't we
U'B'Shabbes
go with
Shisha.
the Yeshua?
Oh, is that Erwin?
Why can't we go with the Yeshomrim?
We'll see. The truth is that Shabbos you could do hosafos me'ikar hadin, but it's best to avoid if we can. Okay, we have a ritual committee coming meeting coming up anyway. We'll discuss it then.
Okay.
That on Yom Kippurim is seven aliyos and Shabbos is six aliyos. So very obvious. We see a discrepancy between Rabbi Akiva and our Mishnah. Our Mishnah says six aliyos for Yom Kippur, seven for Shabbos. Rabbi Akiva flips it and says seven for Yom Kippur and six for Shabbos. However, he is in accordance with our Mishnah in the sense that he says, "In man that he's open to adding on aliyos, but of course not deducting the aliyos. So money, E Rabbi Shmuel, Kash Tosefos. Right? Shmuel can't be the town of our Mishnah because he does not allow you to add Hosafos. E Rabbi Akiva, Kasha, Shisha, Beshiva. And Rabbi Akiva flipped Shabbos and Yom Kippur to 7 and 6 instead of 6 and 7. So who then could be the town of our Mishnah? Amar Rava, Tanadavei Rabbi Shmuel, he. So it's actually in accordance with Rabbi Shmuel's base medrash. The Tanadavei Rabbi Shmuel, the Yom Tov Chamisha, Yom Kippurim, Shisha, Beshabbos, Shiva. Yom Tov is 5, Yom Kippur is 6, Shabbos 7. A postman, you cannot deduct. Avol Mosifin Alehem, but you can add Hosafos. Devar Rabbi Shmuel, these are the words of Rabbi Shmuel. Well, here's the issue. Kash Rabbi Shmuel and Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel seems to be self-contradictory because we have another recording of Rabbi Shmuel who says that you cannot add Hosafos. So how do I make sense of this? Many times you'll see this in the Gemara. Trei Tanoi Aliyu de Rabbi Shmuel. These are two different Tanoim in accordance have different records of what Rabbi Shmuel said. So according to one record of Rabbi Shmuel is not in accordance with our Mishnah. According to another record of Rabbi Shmuel would seem to be the source for our Mishnah in that he says Yom Kippur 6, Shabbos 7, you can add on, but you can't deduct. There we go. Okay, any questions? Okay, the Gemara is just going to elaborate on this point a little bit more. Mantana Lahadatanya. So how do we make sense of the following brisa? Which Tana, now that we know that our Mishnah is Rabbi Yishmael, we now want to figure out, we're going to present the brisa, and we want to figure out which Tana that is it Rabbi Akiva, Rabbi Yishmael, who fits with the following brisa. So here we go. Mantana Lahadatana be Yom Tov Ma'achrin Lavo Maharin Latzeis. On Yom Tov, people tend to come late. And they tend to rush out early. Yeah, makes sense. It's a long davening. Who wants to sit through all that? And then you want to rush out for a Yom Tov meal. B'yom Kippurim Marin Lavo Ma'achin Latzeis. On Yom Kippur, people, you know, they don't have breakfast to eat. They're like, okay, may as well just come to shul already and start davening. And on Yom Kippur, they're no rush to get out. Why? Because, well, we'll see in a moment perhaps why, but who's in a rush? You know, even I'm not in a rush on Yom Kippur. I got nothing to, you know, what else we got? Now, of course, there's Daf Yomi Shir. You know, it's one of the most inspirational things I see is our Daf Yomi crew. You can see in that short little amount of time between Musaf and Mincha and Yom Kippur, you can see them sitting down and still keeping to their Seder every day. So it's a inspirational thing to see people keeping to their Siddurim. Anyway, and at Shabbos, people apparently do rush to shul, but they also rush out of shul. So, okay, what does this mean? Are we talking about people's like practices? How early they come? How late they come? What is this Bryson talking about? So, Lema Rabbi Akiva is like Gavri Yisera. Maybe this Brysa is in accordance to Rabbi Akiva. Why is it on Yom Kippur that it takes longer and at Shabbos people are out faster? Maybe what the Bryce is conveying is because according to Rabbi Akiva, Shabbos only has 6 aliyos, whereas Yom Kippur has 7 aliyos. Therefore, people are in shul later because of that extra aliyah, whereas on Shabbos, people are out earlier because it's one less aliyah, according to Rabbi Akiva. However, as you guys are probably wondering, I mean, shkoyach, what's one more aliyah? It's a drop in the bucket compared to the rest of Yom Kippur davening. Which is basically what the Gemara retorts. If you tema Rabbi Yishmael, you should denafish see dura diyoma. The reason that people aren't getting out of shul and Yom Kippur as fast as Shabbos has nothing to do with the number of aliyos. This brisa could even be in accordance with Rabbi Yishmael. Why are people in shul so long in Yom Kippur? Well, because it's a very long davening, no matter how many aliyos you have. So it's not muchrach. We don't have to say the brisa is in accordance with Rabbi Akiva over Rabbi Shmuel, or Rabbi Shmuel over Rabbi Akiva. It could be read either way. End of this section of the Gemara. Any thoughts, any questions? Okay. So the Gemara now is going to ask, Hani Shlosha Chamisha Shiva Kenegin Mi. So where do we get the idea that there are 3 aliyos on a weekday, 5 aliyos for Yom Tov, and 7 aliyos for Shabbos. Now, the question of the Gemara is a little bit puzzled. Why are we only asking about the days that have 3 aliyos, days that have 5, and days that have 7? What's missing?
4.
4 and 6. So 6 we'll address actually later. We'll talk about Yom HaKippurim later. But Tosos asked the question. If you just briefly glance at the first Tosos on the top left of the daf, you'll see that they asked this very question. Kasha, amaylo bayi midalit shel Rosh Chodesh, keneged mi, v'chein shel cholo shel moed. Why don't we inquire about the reason why there's 4 for Chol HaMoed and for Rosh Chodesh? So Tosos says, v'ish lomar, dekimle the time of the Musaf chashu tvui chad gavra. Really, we understand that Rosh Chodesh and as well as Chol HaMoed should really be 3, but we understand because of the Karban Musaf we push it up by 4. But we don't as easily understand why, how we get to 5, how we get to 6, and how we get to 7. How do we bump it up that much? It's not sufficient that the reasoning that, there's a higher level of punishment, there's Karis and Yom Kippur, there's stoning, there's skila for one who violates Shabbos, that's not enough to really convince me that there should be so many more aliyos. If we didn't have a more compelling reason why. So the Gemara is going to explore right now what is the deeper significance behind these numbers. Okay, here we go. So, Hani Shoshu Chamisha Shiva Kenegami, where do we get 3, 5, and 7 from? So, Kenegami, Kligi Ba Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmi Vechad Da'ame, Umana Rabbi Shimon Pazi, Rabbi Lashon Rabbi Shimon Pazi, Vechad Da'ame, Umana Rabbi Yitzchak Bar Nachmi, Rabbi Lashon Bar Nachmini. Okay, basically the Gemara in those two lines there was just giving different combinations of who the possible people are arguing. Take whichever combination of rabbis you want. The point is two great rabbis have two different opinions on where we get these numbers from. Chad Amar Keneged Birchas Kohanim. One says it corresponds to the Sukkim of Birchas Kohanim. Wait, where do I get numbers in Birchas Kohanim? Anyone know? So if you look at Rashi tells us, Shlosha Tevos of Pasuk Rishon, the first part has 3 letters. The Chamisha of Pasuk Shenin, and 5 in the next one. The Shiva of Pasuk Shlishi, and then the final Pasuk has 7 words. So we see the pattern of 3, 5, 7 in the Pesukim of Birchas Kohanim, of Yerechicha. Okay, that's one opinion. The other suggestion, V'chad Amar, Keneged Shlosha Shomrei Asaf, Chamisha Meori Pnei HaMelech, and Shiva Roei Pnei HaMelech. Where do we get this from? There were different kinds of guards and dignitaries who surrounded the king. So there was literally, the guards who were there at the door, who were guarding where the king was. There were generally 3 members of that special guard. There were 5 people who stood Meroe Pnei HaMelech, and then there was another 7 who were included scribes and other people and dignitaries who were always in the presence of the king. So they were his groupies. So the point is that we want to give the Torah a similar kind of honor guard, the same way a king would have. So the same way the king would have 3, 5, 7 surrounding him, so too for the Torah, it should have 3, 5, 7. Tani Rav Yosef, Shlosha Chamisha B'Shiva. And in fact, this is supported by Rav Yosef, who taught the following, that 3, 5, 7, where we get it from, Shlosha Shomrei Asaf, Chamisha Meroi Pnei HaMelech, Shiva Roi Pnei HaMelech, the 3, 5, 7, again, the retinue that was with the king. Amarle Abaye says to Rav Yosef, whom he was learning from, Adha Inna my title of Parshamar. If this is the true reason behind where we get the number 3, 5, 7 aliyos, why did we've learned Mesachus Megillah many times together? Why am I only hearing this for the first time? Amarle, Rav Yosef responds, I didn't know that this was something you were interested in understanding. Did anyone ask me what the deeper significance was behind these numbers? And I didn't answer them? In other words, I can't preempt every question you're going to have. When are we going to get up to it? We just got up to it now. So if had you asked me the first time we learned it, I would have told you. Okay. It's interesting to see the dynamic between how the teachers and students interacted in the times they come out. All right. Now, going forward. Amar le Yaakov min Alei Rav Yehuda. Hani shishi yom kippurim k'nekem me. Okay, I got 3, I got 5, I got 7. Tosus explained 4. Where do I get 6 aliyos on Yom Kippur? Amar le k'neged shisha sha'amdu mimino shel Ezra v'shisha mismola. This corresponds to the 6 people who would be on the right of Ezra and the 6 who accompanied him on his left. Now, who are these? So if we look in the pasuk, it's number hey, Vayamod Ezra Hasofer al Migdal 8, Asher Asula Davar, Vayamod Etzlo, here are the names. On the right side, he had Matisya, Veshema, Fanoya, Uriah, Vechilkia, Umaseya, al Yamino, that's 6 on the right, Umismolo, and on his left, Pidaya, Mishol, Malkia, Vechoshin, Cheshbana, Zacharia, Mushlam. So if you were keeping count of all those different people, you'll notice the following. 1 second, just lost the place. Okay. So the question the Gemara then asks is Hani Shiva Havu. But wait, I count 7. Right? There's Zachariah and then Mushlam. So Haini Zachariah, Haini Mushlam. Zachariah was called Zachariah Mushlam. That was his title. The Mikro Mushlam. The Mishlam Ba'uvde, because he was wholesome in his service. So it's really 6. Point being is, we see that there were 6 men on each side who accompanied Ezra HaSofer, Ezra the scribe, the one who came up with all the Olei Bavel, those who repopulated the land of Israel after the Babylonian exile. And so, therefore, we want to accompany the Torah in a similar fashion. Okay, end of that section. Now we're going to get to a two-liner here in the Gemara, but it, as often happens when learning Gemara, sometimes it's the most terse or brief statements that actually require the most analysis. Or not to say the rest of this doesn't require much analysis, but I bet this next line is going to raise more eyebrows than the previous section. Tana Rabbana, very relevant to what we just had over Simchas Torah. Hakol Olin the Minyan Shiva, anyone can actually get an aliyah, one of the 7 aliyos on Shabbos. There's a discussion whether this is referring strictly to Shabbos. Many of the Mefarshim seem to understand that Shabbos is just the example being given because there's more spare aliyos to give out, more people show up to shul on Shabbos. So lav dafka just on the 7 aliyos on Shabbos. Vafil kadim vafil isha, even a minor. And even a woman can get an aliyah. However, our rabbis taught that even though a woman could, in theory, get an aliyah, she may not read because it violates, no, it's wrong. It's an affront to the dignity of the congregation. So, what do we make of that? What's the question you might ask about that? So if a woman, well, there's a number of questions. One question that might stick out right away is if a woman can actually, may Iker Hadin, get an aliyah to the Torah, and the only reason that a woman cannot get an aliyah is because it's an affront to the dignity of the congregation. Well, what if the congregation at the next annual meeting gets together and they all vote that they're fine with women getting aliyahs to the Torah and Shul? So if the congregation is fine with it, can't they be mochel?
No, I don't think you can. You can't be mochel on your honor. Can you?
Why not? If it's an affront to me and I say it's not an affront to me, it should be fine, right?
Why can you get an aliyah and that's okay altogether? Why is that okay for the congregation?
It's not. They're saying it's not.
It's not. Phyllis, you're asking is, what was the Havamina that would get an aliyah in the first place? So this actually comes back to a discussion we had last week. If I understand, plus what you're referring to, is that, well, if men are obligated to a reading, it makes sense that men can get an aliyah. But if women are not obligated to a reading, then why should they get an aliyah?
Right.
Very good. So there was an opinion we saw last week. The opinion that's quoted in the Magen Avraham, based on a passage in Maseches Sofrim that indicates that women actually are equally obligated in Kriyas HaTorah. However, that's very much not a mainstream opinion. But you know what? Before we answer this question, I want to bring in our good friend, the Birchas Avraham. So the Birchas Avraham, I don't think I actually explained who he was, but he actually, it's Rav Avraham Ellinger. So he actually passed away in 2021. His yahrzeit, I think, just passed. So, you know, should, not that he needs chuyos from our learning, but should definitely be a schut for his neshama. So he was a major Litvisher Rosh Yeshiva in Israel. And again, Birkas Avraham is kind of like a, you go into any yeshiva, this is a beloved sefer that people use to kind of quickly get some of the good lumdus on a sugya. So he asked the following question. What would be another problem with a woman reading from the Torah? Remember, back in the day, when you got an aliyah, you didn't just get an aliyah and there was a balkore. Back in the day, if you got an aliyah, you actually read your aliyah. It wasn't just an honor, it was a responsibility. So this raised the question, hug kol isha erva. Wait a minute, don't we have an issue of kol isha as well? Aren't women not supposed to be chanting and singing publicly? So as you might remember, we actually addressed this question back on, what was it, Daf Dalet, somewhere roughly toward the beginning. We had this question when we addressed the question of women leading Megillah, not just Kriyas HaTorah. So one answer that we gave, which he suggests here as well, is that it's begeder dibur ba'alma, that chanting, laning, is not equivalent to singing. It's closer to speaking than singing, and therefore it would not be an issue of kol be'isha erva. Another answer he gives, and I think it's based on the Me'iri, he suggests, v'yosinir te'ina gamana she'yitikra sakriya. If you look at the words of the Gemara closely, what does the Gemara say? It says that she could be ola the Torah. She could get an aliyah to the Torah. Aval hakriya tia ayde ish. But the assumption was, even back then, if a woman in theory was to get an aliyah, it would certainly would have had to have been with a male bal korei. At best, she would get an aliyah the way that we get an aliyah today. Another issue is, if you don't take the route of saying that chanting is not kol b'isha erva, if we assume it's kol b'isha erva, it used to be that when you got the first aliyah and the last aliyah, the guy who got the first aliyah made the opening bracha, the guy who got the last aliyah made the concluding bracha. But nowadays, everyone makes a bracha out loud. Even according to this Havamina in the Gemara, that once upon a time there was maybe a thought that we'll get an aliyah. Now, since every person who gets aliyah in Torah needs to make a bracha, certainly even may ikar hadin, even from a strict legalistic standpoint, even if you could circumvent kovet hatzibur, it would still not work. You wouldn't be able to give a woman an aliyah. Another idea that's given, not here in Birchas Avraham, I'm forgetting where I saw it, but also I think some Achronim in the sugya suggest that even though the impetus for preventing women from getting aliyos was because of Kavod HaTzibur, once that was the impetus, but they formalized it. Meaning many times any gezeira, any rabbinic institution or enactment has a motivation behind it, right? We don't just make enactments for the fun of it. We have a lot of them. You might think we do, but we don't. So true Kavod HaTzibur was the motivation, but once that became formalized, HaTzibur would not be able to be mochel on that. So Rav Ellinger, and I've seen this elsewhere as well, back in the day when I was looking to Tirchot HaTzibura, because in the sugya of Tirchot HaTzibura, imposing on the Tzibur's time, the Tirchot HaTzibura is basically kind of, it's a lack of Kavod HaTzibur. You don't value the congregation's time, so you impose on their time, which is an affront to their dignity. So tyranny sort is just a negation of Kavod HaTzibur. It's a violation of it. Now, but the question is, where do we get this notion that all of a sudden, once you have a number of people together, they constitute a tzibur to the extent that there's a prohibition to do anything that's an affront to their dignity? So, well, what is a tzibur? By definition in halakha, what makes it tzibur? So Tzibur.
Was 10? That? 10?
Right. And there's 10 men. Now, why is 10 men significant? What happens when 10 men get together? The Shekhinah rests among them. That's how we doubt. That's why we're allowed to say Dvarm Sheva Kedusha. That's why we're allowed to say Kaddish. That's why we could say Baruch Hu. That's why we could say Kedusha. Because we can say what we call Dvarm Sheva Kedusha, these special holy prayers with heightened sanctity, can only be recited when the Shekhinah, the presence of God, rests among us. So when we say Kavod HaTzibur, Revillinger suggests, it's not really because we care so much for the people. It's that it's Kavod HaTzibur's code word many times for Kavod HaShekhinah, for respecting the divine presence, which comes when there is a Tzibur that is constituted. Therefore, remember our whole question was, maybe a Tzibur at the next annual meeting can decide if they're going to be mochel. They're going to forgo their kavod, and they'll change the halacha. Well, the answer is, if it's not about the tzibur, but it's about kavod hashchinah, a God's dignity, God will call it tzibur maskin, even if it's a unanimous vote at the annual meeting. It's God's dignity. We don't have the right to be mochel on Hashem's kavod. We can be mochel on our kavod, but here it's Hashem's kavod that's at stake. So even if we're fine with it, it's not our place to be mochel on Hashem's behalf. That's the suggestion Rav Ellinger gives.
Is this how we end up with a women's minion? There's no issue of Shekhinah. There's no issue of Kol Isha. Is that why it's less controversial?
The Shekhinah is always there with the women.
What was that?
The Shekhinah is always with the women.
Yes, they're already holy. We did a shiur on that. So this deserves its own shiur. Maybe we'll do next year before Simchas Torah. But Rav Schechter has an entire essay called Tzilecha Be'ikvei Atzon, which he wrote somewhere in the late 1980s, I believe, which was nearly a 20-page essay in classic rabbinic Hebrew on the topic of women's tefillah groups and women dancing with Torah and Simchas Torah, which he comes down very hard against. So anyway, it's worth
it. How does the word tzon end up in that title? What something about sheep?
Yeah, it's a play on words from a pasuk in Shira Shirim. That
sounds pretty derogatory.
It's a bit of a play on the theme of that pasuk. But yeah, he's not comparing women to sheep, if that's what you're worried about.
Yeah.
I got to be careful. Anyway.
Their husbands to sheep.
Yeah, very good. So anyway, to Paul's point, the reason that women's tefillah groups are are more accepted than what a partnership minion is because, a major thing is you don't have the issue of kolisha. The issue is a woman gets up as balas tefillah. So then you have a major issue of kolisha, because at our minyanim we sing. Now maybe if she was the baas tefillah at the 6 a.m. on the 7 a.m. minyan on a Simchas Torah, we're trying to chick-chock get it over with, maybe there'd be a heter over there. But yeah, that's kind of the idea. There is a question though with women's tefillah groups. The thing is, women's tefillah groups, the notion of women getting together and davening is not like this modern progressive idea. Like you go to any Beis Yaakov, in the girls' classrooms, to my understanding, all the girls daven together. That's what they do. The controversial part was more the Kriyas HaTorah. Now, in theory, there's nothing fundamentally wrong with a woman taking out a Torah and reading from it. It's just you need to have the intellectual honesty to understand that it's equivalent to taking out an art scroll Chumash and reading from it, which is also really nice and good. Just it's not Kriyas HaTorah. There's no Kiyam of the Chiyav of Kriyas HaTorah. Now, what some people seem to not like about it is that it could give the impression that it's something that it's not. And then, of course, people don't like it because they believe it's motivated by feminism, and then, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So anyway, that's like the brief answer, but it deserves its own shiur. We'll put it on the docket for before Simchas Torah next year. How about that? All right. Very good. One other thing, interesting point that he brings up, just footnote over here. He cites the Agos Maimoni, which says Ein Likros Kananim Betor. He writes that you should not call up Kananim to the Torah, not call up any Canaanites. Now, that's really weird. First of all, I mean, there's arguably an obligation to eliminate the Canaanite nation. So I'm not sure how you'd be calling the Canaanite to the Torah. But assuming he just means Goyim in general, what's the Havamina that you could call up a non-Jew to the Torah? Can you call up a non-Jew to lead Musaf? Like where, what's the Havamina in that? So some would suggest that what he means is an Eved Kanani, a non-Jewish servant. Who is a non-Jew servant equivalent to in mitzvos? He shares the same mitzvos as women do. So the interesting Havamina is that you think, well, if women really could read from the Torah, but the only reason they don't is because of gender. So an Eved Kanani who has the same level of chiyuvim as a woman, but is a man, I would have a Havamina, maybe he could get an aliyah to the Torah. So comes Agos Maimini to say, you can't do that, but it's a very interesting nafkamina and a havamina that maybe you could. Generally, anytime, this is good to know methodologically, that someone tells you, preemptively tells you, but don't think that you can do X, many times because there's somebody somewhere else who does say that you can do X. So I'm sure if you look at Agos Maimini, maybe even there, he cites it, who suggests that shita.
Was the bracha as we now know it, Bachar Banu, used at that time? Because logically, they couldn't say Bachar Banu because they weren't Bachar Banu.
Ah, interesting. As far as I know, it's the same bracha. So Paul makes a very good suggestion, which I didn't think of this one. Even the lashon of the bracha says Asher Bachar Banu Mikolamu. You selected us from all the other nations, and here we have this guy who is an Eved Kanani from the other nations. Now, one could try to say that there's this whole chakira. It's like the Eved Kanani, because he's like partially converted. So is it that he's a guy with extra mitzvos, or is he a Jewish man with less mitzvos? So, you know, depending on how you view the Eved Kanani as a Jew or non-Jew, he's kind of in this liminal twilight zone. But excellent point, Paul, about the bracha. Maybe that's the reason. Okay, very good. That was a little one line of the Gemara. Let's go forward, unless there are any other questions. All right, here we go. Yibayilahu. So now the final part of the Gemara for tonight is we're going to talk about Maftir, the Maftir Aliyah. Does anyone know why we have a Maftir?
Wasn't it because at one time we weren't allowed to read the Torah, so instead of doing that, we...
Very good. So Toby points out about the Haftarah in general. The reason is because at one point they didn't let us read from the Torah, and for some reason they let us read from Nevi'im. I'm not sure why they made such a distinction, but we used to read from Sifrei Nevi'im in lieu of Kriyas HaTorah. And then once we were able to continue reading from the Torah, the Chum were like, it's probably a good idea. All these Yeshiva Baruchim aren't learning Nach anyway, so maybe we should keep the Haftarah in Davening. So excellent, Toby. Yes. But
I think Nevi'im is that was allowed because it's history. It's what happened with us in the past before the Roman conquest. Mm. The reading from the Torah, we're acknowledging God as opposed to the Roman gods, the whole collection of them, which they couldn't take.
So I do hear that for certain parts of Nach, but like a huge theme you'll see throughout the Nevi'im is that they're chastising the Jewish people for worshiping idols.
Yeah, I understand, but it's still, and I'm looking for an explanation for the answer to the question, and they were reading history. Now the history may be the chastisement about idolatry and other practices that are forbidden. But it's history. It's what transpired with us in the past, and we were able to slip it through on that basis.
Well, I guess that same basis is why in yeshiva we don't really learn Nach, because it's just the history. Chas v'shalom, of course. All right.
I got the impression it's because it's what women learn, so we don't.
Well, I mean, or the Haskalah, the Enlightenment movement, there's like different theories on that. But yeah, Marina.
if I remember correctly, because the blessing before and after Haftarah, it is much longer. So it could look as it is more important. So the same person who read Haftarah has Aliyah for Maftir with to emphasize that it is still much more important Torah reading than Haftarah reading.
Very good. So what Marina tells us, which we'll see in the Gemara momentarily, what Ula tells us is that we don't want to be, as much as we want to treat Nevi'im as very holy Svarim, of course, Nevi'im do not rise to the same level as the dictated word of God, which is the Torah. So we don't want to just go straight from, into the Haftarah, making it seem that's on equal footing. So what do? We append an additional aliyah, which is a maftir aliyah, in order to show, like, don't think that the Haftarah is, kind of almost like worthy in its own right. It kind of like we add the maftir aliyah to show that really the Torah is the real McCoy, and the VM is also valuable, but it's the Torah that carries the true value. So okay, very good. Let's see it inside now. Very good, Marina.
Can I interrupt? Rabbi?
Yes, Judge.
It just popped into my mind. Then why do we sometimes use a cloth for Megillas Ruth, Shira Shirim? Doesn't that make it look like it's a Torah scroll where it's not?
Well, you see, it's an interesting question, Judge, because I think we're thinking about this a little bit anachronistically. Back in the day, everything was put on a scroll. The notion of putting something onto a printed book instead of a scroll is certainly a post-Talmudic phenomenon. I mean, when was the printing press made, guys? Who remembers their dates from high school? I don't remember.
Something, I think.
What was that?
15-something or 16-something.
Much after the Talmud. A thousand years later. So the notion of having a safer, back in the day, everything was kind of put on a scroll to begin with. So it's kind of funny, like living in the 21st century, we associate a scroll with a Torah, but that's kind of how everything was written back in the day. So, there's actually an interesting question because the final mitzvah in the Torah is to write a Torah scroll, which God willing will be fulfilling this Sunday. In fact, by the way, if you've never been able to fulfill this mitzvah, one way of fulfilling it, the Rush has this interesting shita based on how you understand the Rush, that maybe buying books nowadays works in lieu of writing a Sefer Torah. But you know what? The Rambam says, even if you write just one letter in the Torah, you fulfill the 613th mitzvah. So if you've never done it, I recommend coming this Sunday morning. Here's my infomercial. And you can write a letter in the Torah and you can fulfill that mitzvah without having to spend all the money on buying your own Torah. So there you go. Okay. Here we are. Ibailahu, Matir Mashiyah Leminyan Shiva. So here's an interesting question. Should the Maftir count as a seventh aliyah? Generally, you see what we do in Shul. We have the seventh aliyah, we do Kaddish, and then we have Maftir. But before this is formalized, there's a good question to be asked. If we're doing a Maftir aliyah anyway, why can't the seventh aliyah just serve as Maftir? In fact, that's what we do on a fast day, by the way. The third aliyah is the Maftir aliyah. So why can't we do that on Shabbos as well? So it's Machlokis. Rahuna Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba. Chadamar Ola, Chadamar Eino Ola. One says it counts. One says it does not count as the seventh aliyah. It becomes effectively the eighth aliyah. Ma'adamar Ola, the Hakari. The reason of the one who says that it counts as a seventh aliyah as well. You read a seventh aliyah. So there you go. Ma'adamar Eino Ola. And the one who says that the Maftir cannot also count for the seventh aliyah, like Marina said, Kidula, like Ula said, as well, many years earlier, Damar Ula, Ibn Maha Maftir bin Navid, Sarch Yikra B'Torah Tchila. Why do we read from the Torah prior to reading the Haftorah from Navi? Ibn Kavara Torah, because of the dignity of the Torah. You look in Rashi, Shloi He Kavara Torah, Kavara Navi Shaveh, so that the Kavara Torah and the Kavara for Navi are not on equal footing. And since this aliyah is not for the purpose of being an aliyah, but for the purpose of kavod haTorah, therefore, it does not count as a seventh aliyah. It needs to be done after the seventh aliyah, like we do in shul. And therefore, it does not count towards the seventh aliyah. However, we have a contradictory source. We have a contradictory price here. Hamafter benavi lo yivchos me esim ve'echad, that the haftorah cannot be less than 21 psukim. Where do we get 21 from? That seems like a very random number. Well, kineged shiva shakar b'torah. It's because, remember, we learned previously that the minimum amount of psukim in aliyah is how much?
Three.
Very good, Paul. Three psukim. So three times seven is?
21.
21. That's where you get the minimum of 21 psukim in the haftorah, because it's supposed to, remember, it was in lieu of Priyas HaTorah. So it was supposed to correspond to the minimum 21 psukim that we would have otherwise been leaning on Shabbos. So
shouldn't it be 22, because at least one section had to have four psukim?
On a weekday, that would happen. Because on a week, because the minimum amount of laning is 10, right? So, Paul, what I think you're thinking of is a typical weekday laning when we have three aliyahs. So then three, the minimum amount that you have to lay in total is 10. But on a Shabbos, you're already far past 10, so you could split it up three for each. Okay. Okay, there's some kavod haTorah. Okay, fine. Mesik. So I'm not going to be able to psukim. Okay, fine. Kineged shiva shakar b'torah. So this corresponds to the seven aliyos for the Torah. Bim isa smr bahavyam. Now, if you hold that mafir cannot count as the seventh aliyah, but instead will have to be an additional aliyah, then the haftorah should have to be at least 24 psukim to account for the additional mafir aliyah. So what's the answer? Came into Mishum Kavod HaTorahu. Turning the page. Kenegdo nami lo bai. The additional mafir aliyah is not an aliyah, really. It serves a functional purpose of enabling us to do the haftorah in a way that's respectable to the Torah. So therefore, we keep it at 21. Okay. One final piece, and then that'll get us up to the Mishnah, which is God willing, we'll pick up next week. Maskif la Rava. So Rava asked, so this haftorah, Balosechem Safu, only has less than 21. How many does it have? I don't have the number. What's it? 16? What do you got? What? I'm sure our article probably points it out. 16 psukim or so? Is that how much? Okay, less than 21. It's less than 21 psukim. So, if this is true, that haftorah has to be minimum 21, where do I get this haftorah, which is less than 21? So, our answers, we saw this actually, Tosos references a few shiurim ago, Shani Hasan to Salik and Yana, when we were talking about Rosh Chodesh. Since this is one entire inyan, this is one entire subject matter, you can finish it at even less than 21 psukim. The 21 psukim rule is only when you're in the middle of a larger section, you have to do at least 21 psukim from that larger section. But when you finish a topic, you can conclude the topic even before 21. Is that really true that the only time that haftorah is less than 21 psukim is when you finish the topic in hand? There are many times that I was standing before Rabbi Yochanan and we were reading the haftorah, and then only 10 psukim in, he says, that's enough. All right, finish. We're going to Musaf. How could that be? Is it a minimum of 21 psukim? How's it 10? The answer is, Malkum Shish Torgam Anshani. When there is a translator, it's different. Why would a translator be different? Rashi says, Shish Torech Litzibor. Because he's going to keep translating. What's going to happen? If for every pasuk, there's a translation of the pasuk, that gets you to 20. And the issue is that if you go one more pasuk, and then he translates the next pasuk, you're at 22 psukim. And you're at 22 psukim, that's called a tircha nitzibura. Because why are you going past 21 if you don't need to? Arguably, many times you look in the article, it says, you know, Sephardim start here, Ashkenazim start here, and Ashkenazim always have a longer Haftorah. Apparently, we're not as concerned for Tirchut Sigura. You see it a lot, but I'm not an expert. But from my little bit I've seen, it seems that Sephardim are much more careful about Tirchut Sigura than Ashkenazim are. We add on, like, not for the same reasoning, but we add on extra Kaddishim and Davening. Sephardim seem to be much more careful. Think about it, like Ashkenazim. We link Koheles on Shabbos Chol Moed. So what happened was, Rabbi Cohen had to manage the sanctuary service. So I wound up on Shabbos Chol Moed speaking in the 7 a.m., the 8 a.m., the 10th, and the Sephardic Minyan. And basically, I gave the same spiel to all of them. I got up there. Was anyone there when I gave the drasha that Shabbos? Well, if you were out for a little bit, you would have missed it. It was only 30 seconds. I got up there and I said, "Kishem sheki baldi skar al trisha, kachni mekabel skar al prisha." Sometimes you get more scar from refraining to darshan than actually darshan. And then I bid them adieu. I said, "You know, have fun, everyone. See you later." So I got to the Sephardic minyan. I did the same thing, and you know, all the Ashkenaz, over regular minyan, I'm like, when I did that, they're like, "Yeah, no sermon," and like it was like standing ovation. I never got that first sermon before. But then when I went to the Sephardic Minyan, I said the same thing. And then, you know, I was expecting the same applause. And I walked in, I'm like, "Wait, you don't want to give the Torah to Harley? You don't want to give the sermon?" And then I go down to the lobby and I see a few minutes later, the Sephardim start filing out. And I turn, I'm like, "Wait, how did you guys finish so fast? I didn't give you a full sermon because I thought you guys had a longer dominant." They said, "Well, you guys have Koheles, we don't." I said, right. So the whole notion of like us doing Koheles and these, they do Esther also, don't worry. But we kind of like Ashkenaz, we're like, why not? Let's make davening longer. We love it, don't we? So we have a lot to learn from our Sephardic brethren. Many things. Okay, let's finish this up. So where do we leave? So where there's a translator, it's different because it adds on more time. Where there's a Meturgamon, we end earlier. So, and I have to look back to see where I saw this, but what's the issue of Tirchut Tzibura? You know, don't we need a translator? So actually, I saw it in the Pesifta Gemara. I forgot who's quoting it from. But essentially, an elaboration on Rashi's point about Tirchut Tzibura as a Tirchut Tzibura to translate for a congregation that doesn't want the translations. So, what does that mean? So, it's interesting, by the way. You'll see for different minyanim want different things. In the sanctuary, for instance, at our sanctuary service, if you don't announce the page every 35 seconds, someone will freak out on you. Whereas in the chapel, if you do announce it every 35 seconds, people will get really annoyed at you. So what he's basically saying here is, and this is not me speaking, is that if you're at a minyan that wants the translations and needs the translations, it's more of a tircha on them to just read Hebrew without translating it. But if you're at a minyan that doesn't want the translations and you keep, you know, stopping davening every few seconds to announce a page or to frame something, explain something, and they're like, you know, like, "We know what's going on, let's move," that is a Tirchut Tzibura as well. So the important thing is that depending on the nature of the minyan, what's a tircha for one is not a tircha for the other, and what's a tircha for one is a tircha, you know, so it just depends on who you've got with you, and I'm speaking to myself mainly over here. It's always important to keep in mind who the main audience is. All right. That brings us to the Mishnah Chaf Gimel Amud Beis, and God willing, we'll pick it up with that next week. I'll send out an email as a reminder. I realize that because of the Simchas Torah thing, and I need to kind of be at the site even earlier to make sure everything's running properly, I don't think it'll work with the Sunday morning class. My apologies. I know it's been a while, so I'll send out an email, but just letting you know now. And again, for next week, for evening Shirim, if there are two more people who would like to be mitzdarif with Toby and would like to come on a regular basis in person, I'm happy to move this back to hybrid with in-person with Zoom option. So, okay, you can send me an email if you're interested. How about that?
Can I ask you a last question?
Yeah.
we spend a lot of time, the Gemara spends time about the issue about the woman, whether a woman can or cannot take Aliyah, but it doesn't talk about the child.
Well, there's actually, that, to be fair, the Gemara hardly spent any time. I spent a lot of time on that with the Mefarshim, but yeah.
But there was no discussion of the issue of the child.
Well, we didn't talk about it, but there is a discussion about that. And the discussion with children is a pretty broad one. So giving the Mishnah Berurah seems to be fine with giving maftir to children. But there's a separate issue, which actually is related to Kavodat Tzibur. Even if you have a child, let's say who's bar mitzvah, but he, you know, hasn't really hit puberty yet, he doesn't have facial hair, he still looks like a little kid. So then also the Rishonim Achronim talk about how that also might be disrespectful to the Tzibur, because as much of a nice kid as he might be, you know, you're going to have to pick someone to advocate for you before a Melch Basar Vadam, you know, you're going to pick an adult to do that, or someone who looks like an adult. So there is a similar question.
I don't know about that. I'd rather have an innocent child. I'd rather have an innocent child advocate for me.
Okay. It's, I guess you'll have to take it up with Chazal.
Yeah.
Anyway, but yes, Paul, there's a lot to talk about children, and maybe we'll open up next time. If I have time, we could open up next time talking about that as well. But similar question about Kavod HaTzibur and Kavod HaShechina as well. Okay. All right. Have a good Shabbos, everyone. Thank you all for spending time learning together.
Good night.